Hello and welcome to the 9th episode of Xbox Mojo. My name is Thomas, and in this episode I want to talk primarily about Elden Ring and my experiences with this game. But first, here's a quick news update. Sony has finally announced the new subscription service, and usually that would have been a reason for a special episode for me. But the announcement should have been better for that. Instead of creating a big Game Pass competitor, they're simply expanding PlayStation Plus and merging it with PlayStation Now. As a subscriber, you then have a choice of three plans. PlayStation Plus Essential. It is the current PlayStation Plus. There are discounts, cloud storage, access to multiplayer, and at least two downloadable games every month. No new features, and so the price remains the same. In Europe, €8.99 monthly, €24.99 quarterly, and €59.99 annually. PlayStation Plus Extra, all the benefits from Essentials remain included, plus you get access to up to 400 PS4 and PS5 games. This is roughly what PlayStation Now offers in terms of download games. Costs in Europe are €13.99 monthly, €39.99 quarterly, and €99.99 annually. PlayStation Plus Premium offers all the benefits of Essential and Extra, plus up to 340 games from the PS1, PS2, PS3, and PSP catalogs, which will then be available via streaming or download, with PS3 games working exclusively via streaming. In other words, just like PlayStation Now does. The plan also included limited time trials to try games before you buy. The cost in Europe is €16.99 monthly, €49.99 quarterly, and €119.99 annually. This new service will be available starting in June. Games such as Death Stranding, God of War, Marvel Spider-Man, Miles Morales, Mortal Kombat 11, and Returnal will also be offered at launch. Day 1 releases are not planned. Jim Ryan continued to tell his fairy tales in this regard about how Day 1 releases of the PlayStation Studios would lead to the fact that the level of investment would no longer be possible and the quality would suffer. Has the good probably missed Day 1 releases like Forza Horizon 5? And with Starfield, a huge single-player game will also land in Game Pass this year, and I think there will be no qualitative problems. After all, this time he also said, and I quote, "The way the world is changing so very quickly at the moment, nothing is forever," end quote. So he's building his backdoor right in this time. After all, his mood change from pre-PS5 launch to a few months later was very terrible. Otherwise, he thinks live service games are the future of gaming. The reason is that they encourage sustained engagement over a long period, which is much more in line with the video game medium. In Sony's takeovers, they specifically buy studios that make multiplayer and service games. There are currently 48 million PlayStation Plus subscribers, and he doesn't believe that the growth in subscription service in the gaming sector will be as strong as that of Spotify or Netflix. Therefore, he sees service games as fitting. Jim is like that, with a completely different opinion every year. He once smiled at service games, and now it's the future of video games. The whole multiplayer focus of PlayStation was unthinkable 2 years ago, and now he sees subscription service as not good enough, and in 1 or 2 years he will talk about how essential subscription service are. I found Phil Spencer's communication better and more transparent. He has been telling us since 2017 what concrete plans they have and is implementing them. Of course, the future with Game Boss was shown at that time, and that you have to think beyond the console and device independent and whatnot. So, the revamp of PlayStation Plus is also attacking Game Pass. It's upselling for people who are stuck in the PlayStation ecosystem, and they have the opportunity for a little more money a month to get access to a lot of games. However, I find it disappointing that the retro games are on the most expensive plan and still partly on work with streaming only. Everyone who has had PlayStation Now knows that there is still a lot wrong with the quality, and it would help if you didn't let the number of games drive you crazy. PlayStation Now has over 700 games and most of them are old crap. It's a shame that Sony still can't manage the backward compatibility. And because of the new pricing structure, I have to say that I probably stick with the smallest subscription. As someone who owns multiple consoles, I don't need the middle subscription because I have Game Pass. And just for trial versions and old games, I don't pay 70 euros a month when I can get a Game Pass Ultimate for 12 or 30 euros. Game Pass wins from the futures, current games, day one releases, additional perks and price. However, the medium subscription might be a welcome addition for those who only play in the PlayStation ecosystem. At the Game Developers Conference, Microsoft announced the creation of a cloud gaming division that will be part of Xbox Game Studios Publishing. This department will be headed by Kim Swift, who has worked as a game designer on Portal, Left 4 Dead, and Star Wars Battlefront 2. Most recently, she served as designing director at Stadia Games and Entertainment. The goal of the new department is to develop cloud-native games. In other words, games that exploit cloud technology will therefore deliver an unprecedented experience. It sounds big, and we will have to wait and see. We all remember Crackdown 3 and the power of the cloud. However, games like Flight Sim use the cloud very well, and at some point, this will be the future and the present. Let's move on to the other news. For example, the no-build mode for Fortnite. Originally intended to be a short event, this mode will now remain in the game permanently. And I love it. I love it. I've played Fortnite on and off and always hated the building part. I want to play a simple shooter and don't want to worry about building houses to get better, coverage. I enjoyed the no build mode, and I'm glad to see that this is so well received that this will be part of Fortnite in the future. I'll be playing the game more often because without building, I really enjoy the Battle Royale in this comic book look. Gearbox is releasing former PlayStation exclusive Godfall for Xbox on April 7. The Ultimate Edition will then be released for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X and S, and Xbox One, and includes the main Godfall game, the updates Primal, Lightbringer, and Exalted, the expansion Fire and Darkness, and the previously exclusive Ascended Edition. And even though the first quarter ended without an Xbox Studio releasing an Xbox game, but Tango Gameworks released Ghostwire Tokyo for PS5, Metacritic 75 on PS5, solid game, and visually the PC version is a looker. I have not yet dealt extensively with the game and will not buy it for PS5. It was different with Devloop, as I was absolutely hot for the game at the time. It's important to note, though, that Ghostwire Tokyo was the last time exclusive PlayStation game from Bethesda. That means we should get Devloop in Game Pass in September and Ghostwire Tokyo in spring 2023. However, I've been working on another game extensively over the past weeks, Elden Ring. And anyone who's been following at least the German podcast, my German Xbox Mojo podcast since Elden Ring was announced, will have noticed that I've barely discussed this game so far. I didn't care about the announcement at the time and didn't understand the hype. That in turn was because I had little to do with From Software's games. Yes, I played a few Armored Cores on PlayStation 20 years ago, or Lost Kingdoms on GameCube. I'd like to mention both Otogis on the original Xbox, which can also be played on Series X in improved form, thanks to backward compatibility. Then years later on PS3 and Xbox 360 on Enchanted Arms, a decently early-gen RPG. And that's how I would sum up my relationship with From Software up to that point. Studio with decent games, but for me, without the big highlights. My focus was on other games and other studios, and then in 2010, Demon's Souls came to Europe for the PS3. It was a game that was also not a sales hit, but gradually built a particular cult around it. And I wouldn't say I liked it. I bought it, I played it, I didn't get far, and abandoned it. The controls are too awkward, the characters move so ponderously, and why do regular enemies do so much damage? So when Dark Souls was released here in 2011, I gave the game a wide berth. Sure, the ratings were top and there was hype, but a spiritual successor to Demon's Souls wasn't something I was interested in. The years passed and the hype around Souls-like grew, but I also ignored Dark Souls 2 in 2014. Only Bloodborne in 2015 aroused my interest. Because the setting was so different, the gothic art style turned me on, and the gameplay was without shields and overall more action-packed. Bloodborne, I didn't cancel then. I beat 3 bosses and had fun. I leveled the character but died often, and the loading times were then highly too long. They were terrible. Too long for me, so I took a break, which unfortunately continues to this day, except for a few minimal interruptions. I like Bloodborne and wonder why I didn't continue playing it. Dark Souls 3, on the other hand, I ignored in 2016 because I couldn't start a series with Part 3. It's not possible, isn't it? In 2019, I was surprised to see Sekiro win Game of the Year at the Game Awards, but in every article it was mentioned how hard Sekiro was and that it was From Software's most challenging game. But I also want to play through games, so I gave Sekiro a wide berth, even though the title held a particular fascination for me. So finally, in November 2021, I bought the game on sale for just under 20 euros. I played it for just, for one afternoon and had a lot of fun with it. But then other games intervened again, so I didn't even beat the first boss. I ended up buying Dark Souls Remastered on sale, sort of my chance to give the series a shot after all. I played the tutorial and got along well, and then I visited the Firebend Shrine for the first time and didn't know what to do from then on. I talked to the NPCs and finally discovered a graveyard with 2 skeletons, and they killed me. I tried again and got knocked out again. This repeated itself. I took a break and tried again weeks later with identical results. I thought the game was so hard that I would fail the first two standard opponents in the game, and so I gave up the game without getting the idea to explore further and go from the shrine to the right, where the natural standard enemies were. So that was my whole soul story and should explain why I've hardly talked about the game so far and why the Elden Ring announcement left me relatively cold. So when it was announced that Horizon Forbidden West would be released on February 18 and Elden Ring on February 25, it was clear to me that I would pick up Horizon. Not because I'm a massive fan of the series, but because I know the series. I know I would enjoy the game, and so it was just the safer bet. And I did have fun with Horizon. I platinumed it and enjoyed the visuals and the numerous improvements over its predecessor. The only thing that didn't pick me up was the story, and I also felt that certain characters were wasted. And then, shortly before the release, Elden Ring's review embargo ended. That is the time from which the press could publish the tests, and the press was full of praise. In the meantime, Elden Ring was practically the best-rated game on Meta and OpenCritic. Now Metacritic has leveled off at 96, which is still outstanding, because nowadays average ratings of over 19 are rare. During the Xbox 360 generation, the press was much laxer in this regard, but if it's hard to crack 19, how rare is a 96, please? It only happens one in a blue moon, and everywhere I heard about masterpieces and I wanted to experience them, it was utterly unclear to me whether it was something for beginners or not. And there were a good chance that I would buy the game for 70 euros, throw it in the corner after a few hours and never touch it again. At this point, I'd like to say that I am holding back on spoilers because enough listeners will not have played through the game yet. I won't say anything about the story or the characters. I am not going to name areas or go into cross-series details either. I will be as vague as possible, but I want to discuss my overall experience. I tried it directly on the first day, and the moment I escaped the tomb and saw Limgrave for the first time, I was hooked. I felt a particular urge to explore very quickly. It felt like Breath of the Wild, a journey with no real focus and a lot of freedom. Here, the bonfire, Sites of Grace, serve as a checkpoints and fast travel options. They also roughly indicate the direction to the next story point. A radar like Skyrim shows you roughly where your next marker is, so better look at the map. Oh crap, you don't have one. Because for each area you have to find a map first, and when you have it, it's just a static map where only a few symbols are marked, such as the Places of Mercy or since the 1.03 patch also NPC locations. It's a matter of exploring the area yourself instead of following icons on a mini map like in Ubisoft games. Every 40 or 30 seconds I would discover a new location and a distance that I wanted to visit. What's back here on that mountain? What is that ruin? I wonder what's in that cave. Oh, a chest, I opened it and plop, I was teleported to a completely different area. Suddenly, I was no longer in the typical fantasy setting, but it looked like hell or an alien planet. In any case, very dangerous, and the enemies were almost impossible for me to defeat. So I was running through this difficult area just trying to unlock more fast travel points. This reminded me of my early days in World of Warcraft, when there were still leveling areas and I was completely outgunned and first underleveled and first cleared the travel points in the eastern Blacklands. It was clear to me that anything was possible in this game from that moment on. A little later, I always came back here to level. These little creatures seemed so inconspicuous, but could kill me with two hits. But with my horse, I could take them out often enough. I loved that I could do all of this in an area where I didn't belong. Still, I wanted to explore the starting area of Limgrave first, and my goodness, what is there to explore? So many mini dungeons, caves, lakes, world bosses, incredible. Pretty early on, my farming area was to go from the church to the soldier camp and try to wreck it. But I had to get used to the different enemies, foot soldiers with lances and shields, swords or trumpets, the last call for reinforcement. I died often but got better with each attempt. Then there was the camp's boss, who seemed invincible to me, until I tried mounted combat with my horse and realized that I could take out the camp relatively easily. Yes, you get a horse. Well, I call it a horse for the sake of simplicity, since it's a hybrid creature. You can call it at any time, and it makes traveling a lot easier thanks to the double jump. And that's what I loved about the game as I explored Limgrave first. Oh, there's a flying creature. Phew, I'll get them down. I prefer to leave the golden rider alone. Try the standard riders instead. Zack, dead. Well, I was dead. Oh, a wolf pack. Bang, dead. Still me. Oh, maybe check out that lake there. Oha, giant crab. Better away. Back there is a safer, oh my god, it wasn't a safer place. Through my trials, I collected runes and was able to level up. I became stronger, could budget more and found better weapons. And so most enemies became more and more doable and I could explore more as a result. Only to find another gatekeeper enemy, like a giant jumping off a mountain. I still thought this was a mini-boss, but no, this was a regular enemy, so I mentioned it here. So I continued leveling and exploring. Eventually, I defeated the enemy and was able to enter a new area of the map, only to be destroyed by the first boss in the first castle. I thought I had leveled enough. I hadn't. But the possibility of leveling for me definitely make the game more beginner-friendly. Because if you enjoy it, you can influence the difficulty yourself for quite some time. And thanks to the open world, you have more level areas than ever before. Instead of constantly repeating certain sections to level up, as in Dark Souls, go to a completely different point on the map. Still, when I did the first boss, I thought I'd never make it through that one. I thought, wow, if this is the standard, how will I finish the game? But eventually, I managed it and then explored the castle, which was so impressive and massive in terms of architecture, like playing the first Demon's Souls level, only bigger. In the end, of course, I also failed at the boss several times. It's part of the game. When this one was done, the way to the next area opened up, and it was even more remarkable than the first one, the setting, the lighting, and everything. Generally, I find the landscape to be excellently designed, since you can always see where you are going thanks to the enormous foresight, whether castle, palace, academy, or whatever. But there are always other sights or exciting points in the landscape that distract you. So it also happened that in the second area, I once again wanted to find and unlock places of grace. Then I stood in the front of a rock wall and just wanted to go up it because I suspected a quick travel point at the end of it. I fought my way through mine tunnels and everything to stand in the front. To stand in front of a boss door at the end. Well, since I'm here, I might as well try that one and fail. But my character And I got better, and so I defeated that boss. Even got success, and the map expanded again. Found it interesting how the map keeps getting bigger and bigger, and every time you think you see it all, another section comes along. Especially since this also pick up on the concept of various role-playing games or action adventures that maybe this one map doesn't show the whole area. Remember Terra Enigma, that Super Nintendo classic, had an upper and lower world. The Legend of Zelda Link to the Past additionally had a shadow world. Of course, Elden Ring also has surprises in this regard. And considering that many of the areas and dungeons are entirely optional, that's great. Yeah, there are huge dungeons that only very few players will see. Dungeons that would be mainstays in other games are simply optional here. You can even defeat a story boss without completing the associated dungeon simply because there is an alternate path. The most brutal enemy in the game is at the end of an optional area. Some say this boss is even the hardest of all boss fights in the series, and I spent an entire Sunday afternoon trying to beat it, and then it worked. That was when I thought I had all the skills to play through the game, so my motivation was increased again, and it happened all the time. Eventually, I mastered the challenge, and the next one was raiding. And no matter how well you leveled up, how good your equipment is, even several standard enemies can kill you. You never feel like Superman in this game. But mastering all these challenges was super satisfying for me. I leveled up my character quite a bit. I made sure to use good equipment. I collected many of the over 50 spirits that come to your aid with bosses or other enemies. These can be upgraded just like weapons, but you need specific resources, so you have to collect them and explore or kill enemies for them. There are many ways to tweak your characters, and I loved using them. It doesn't take that long to unlock the ability to respec, so you don't have to start a new character to try out new skills or to try out new builds. Also, the classes do not determine your playstyle, but only the starting values. That means you should already agree whether you prefer magic or melee. The rest can be optimized later because there's only one skill point per level that you can adjust. Therefore, it is tedious to make a mage out of a pure melee fighter later, simply a bit too time consuming. The game can easily keep you busy for over 100 hours. I had my platinum trophy after 93 hours. Yes, I played it on PS5 because there were reports that this console version would run a little bit better in the launch week. But I never thought weeks ago that I would ever play through the game or even platinum it. After all, I was an absolute Souls noob. But the gameplay loop and the challenges just had me in this and in its grips. And if it ever comes on sale for Xbox, I'll buy it again and play it through it again. Because I also find it visually pleasing. At first glance, it's not a showcase title. But in the world of Elden Rings, the so-called Interlands are picturesquely rendered. I experienced so many visually stunning moments that I stood there with my mouth open and I just thought to myself, I haven't seen that in any game before. Such a shame that there is no photo mode because the panoramas or buildings would have deserved it. Each world is visually significantly different from the others. There is the classic fantasy area and snowy landscapes, but then there are also forest areas, huge cities, or the nightmare land mentioned at the beginning. So that's just what I call it now. And although you can't climb, I found it impressive how much the areas go vertical, but somehow the double jump of the mount has to be used. But please don't forget that the gameplay remains Dark Souls. From the presentations, weapons, battle system, bosses and everything, they could have called the game Dark Souls 4. It comes across like a Dark Souls with a huge open world, And when it comes to the combat system, they've thrown in a pinch of Bloodborne and Sekiro here and there. You can now make a jump attack or start sneak attacks so that the game is a bit less defensive than Dark Souls. For example, spam attacks with R1 or RB are ineffective because you can easily break enemies. If you block an attack with the shield, you can press R2 or RT and execute a powerful defense counter. Then the opponent can slump defenseless for a few seconds and you have a clear path. The animations are great, the hit feedback from the countless weapons is rich, and the fights are very dynamic. The important thing is to find a weapon that you like. I got mine in Limgrave, defeating a unique enemy and leveling up the weapon over time to the max, so I could use it to take down the final boss. I tried so many other options, but always returned to my Bloodhound Fang, bleed damage ole. The game is simply the game of the year so far, thanks to the addictive gameplay and the enormous variety. I'm glad I played through Horizon Forbidden West beforehand, because otherwise I wouldn't have been quite as excited about it. For me, Elden Ring's open world is so close to perfection, and I say that as someone who isn't that big of an open world fan, but hey, so far I couldn't do anything with Souls-like, and now I've even platinumed one. Of course, there are also shortcomings. The controls are a bit overloaded. There were frequent frame rate drops, and technically the game could look better and run more smoothly. The camera is also too close to the character, so the overview suffers, especially with large enemies. You also notice that there is much less to discover in the later areas than at the beginning, and indeed I missed a quest log. I'm not talking about quest markers, but just an overview of active quests, because currently you would have to write something down with pen and paper or the note app of your smartphone. All that is relatively negligible since the rest of the game is satisfying. Whether it deserves a Metacritic 96 or 92 is for other people to decide. I loved solving the puzzles, unlocking shortcuts and flattening monsters. It's also very beginner friendly due to the open structure and in-game options like the spirits you conjure or the ability to take down bosses in co-op mode. At least if you as a player don't expect to finish a boss directly. You either try it out very often or don't mind spending hours leveling up or optimizing your equipment. Veterans of the Souls game will find their way around right away, while newcomers will have to discover the game first, but when it clicks, it clicks. Rarely have I had so much fun in a game, and even more rarely have I had the feeling when the credits rolled that this would go straight into my all-time favorites list. Elden Ring is no part of that list. I also helped a friend with a boss last week and discovered a few new places and played for 4 hours again. I listened to podcasts about Elden Ring, read articles and watched YouTube videos. The game had me firmly in its grip. So much so that I fell into a gaming hole after that. I wanted more Elden Ring, more of that kind of game. I tried a lot, but nothing excited me until I installed Dark Souls 3, because it's more like Elden Ring in terms of pace. Oh, how I like Dark Souls 3. I searched it out and played through it. Unfortunately, the 900p resolution on Xbox is nowhere near contemporary, but the 60fps thanks to FPS Boost and Auto HDR was an upgrade. And yes, you heard me right, I played through Elden Ring and Dark Souls 3 within 5 weeks. In the meantime, I also reactivated my old Dark Souls Remastered save game. It's sad that I nearly needed 10 years to discover the Dark Souls series. Better late than never. Thank you, Elden Ring. And that should have been it for this week. Thank you for listening. The future is bright and the mojo is coming back. Until next time, your Thomas.